All right. Everybody. All right, guys.
Okay. Thanks a call off to Ariel for leaving us, but arranging the ship. So this is a week in which we think about what are the hardest mitzvahs to fulfill. There are three categories of mitzvahs. The easiest mitzvahs are mechanical mitzvahs, mitzvahs shebaguf, mitzvahs that you perform with your body. Obviously, the thought process and the level of identification augments and enhances the mitzvah. But we paskin mitzvahs ein tzrichas kavana. So if a person picks up a lulav, midag ve'nafak be, he's yotze even without understanding the symbolism or the associations. So they're mechanical. The more difficult level of mitzvahs are cerebral mitzvahs. What do we have to believe in? Emuna, Nakadosh Baruch Hu, more or less the 13 Ikarim that the Rambam codified. There's some debate as to what those Ikarim are, but more or less, Chias HaMesim, Achdus Hashem, Hashem is in physical, Briyas Olam, Yitzias Mitzrayim. They're harder. They're not just robotic. You can't just perform them. You have to believe in them. But doctrine can be studied and can be attained. It's information. Obviously, you have to assimilate it and internalize it, but there's a process of assimilation, which is cognitive. But then there are two mitzvahs that are emotional. And those are the two hardest mitzvahs, to generate an emotion, to generate an attitude that's not information or belief or subscription to a set of details, but to actually feel something deeply inside your heart. And the Rambam writes, we'll read a little bit out of order, source number 5, mitzvah li'ahavo u'liyiro. So there's a mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem. It's the mitzvah of Yerushalayim. Now, these two mitzvahs are challenging on two fronts. Number one, for the obvious, because how can you legislate an emotion? I happen to detest chocolate ice cream. There's nothing you could do to make me like, I love vanilla. I actually thought you'd have some vanilla ice cream for me. Next time. You can't make me like chocolate ice cream. Very difficult. How can you legislate my feelings? You can legislate my body. You can legislate my mind. What I should believe in, I can absorb it, and I can assimilate it. How can you legislate my feelings? What's even more challenging is you're legislating my feelings about something I can't describe and certainly not taste or interact with at a physical level. I imagine if I ate chocolate ice cream long enough, I could acquire a taste, even though I detest it. But Hashem isn't chocolate ice cream. Hashem is unknowable and unfathomable and indescribable. And so it's a double challenge. How can the Torah legislate these two passions and emotions? So this is a week in which it's very popular to think about Yirat Shamayim. The Malach descends to Avram at Har Moriah and says, Ata yadati ki yirei elokim ata. So this is the moment that Avram achieves the midah of Yirat Shamayim. So what does it take to be a Yirat Hashem? That's a phrase which rolls off of our tongues, Yirat Shamayim, Yirei Shamayim. What does that mean? How do we achieve that emotion? And you'd think it's something very innate and inborn. It's an impulse, it's a feeling. But there are three psukim which confound that expectation. The three psukim that remind us it's a little bit different than what we would expect. So, pasuk number one, Shlomo Melech writes, Im tevakshenu kakesef echematmonim techapsena, az tavin yiras Hashem v'das elokim timtza. If you'll search for it, and you'll scour and probe for it, as you would for gold, silver, hidden treasures, then you'll understand it. So there really are two flows in this pasuk. One is the process of acquisition. There's some process by which it can be acquired. We don't yet know how. But it seems like it's a cognitive one. Az tavin yiras Hashem. Somehow this impulse, which is emotive, can be triggered by a cognitive process of consideration and thought and understanding. It leads to an emotion, but the road towards it, the road towards this discovery, is cognitive. Az tavin yiras Hashem, and it takes significant effort. Inte chapsenu kekesev uchamat ronim tevakshenu, az tavin yiras Hashem. Vidaz elokim timsa. The second pasuk, which is probably, it's a very simple pasuk, it's very unadorned, very familiar, but it's a very, very powerful pasuk. Reishis chachma yiras Hashem, David HaMelech says, seichal tov l'chalasehem. And this pasuk is important for two reasons. Number one, because it defines yiras Shamayim as a chachma, as a discipline that should be studied and understood, as an area of wisdom, knowledge, understanding. And second of all, because it describes it as reishis chachma, which is even more ambitious. It's the seminal knowledge. Somehow, Yirat Shamayim is meant to unlock all of our intellectual activity. The Sefer Bereishis Bara Elokim was the start of a world that unfolded after our Kadosh Baruch Hu created Shamayim Varetz. So Reishis Chachma is not just that it's important. If it were important, we'd say Chachma Chashuva, Chachma Gedola. Reishis suggests there's a Shadus. So Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem implies that by excelling at Yiras Shamayim, somehow you'll be smarter in biology. Somehow you'll be better at your math test. And certainly the Tosfos says you'll read tomorrow, and then the Rashba you'll read the next day. Strange. I would think to be better skilled at reading a Rashba, I should read more Rashbas. But evidently, by being a better Yirat Shamayim, there are intellectual horizons that are expanded. Reishis Chachma, Yiras Hashem. And the third pasuk is Eov. So Shlomo, David, and Eov, the three very different people. And they're coming from three different angles, but they're circling around the same issue. Remember, Shlomo was the Chacham Mikol Adam, David was the Tzadik Mikol Adam. That's the difference between Tehillim and Shir HaShirim. Tehillim is raw emotion. Shir HaShirim was poetry. They're very different books. For those of you studying literature, a hymn is very different from a poem. David HaMelech never met a metaphor he didn't like to conclude. That's how you kill poetry. You don't conclude your metaphors. You leave your metaphors open-ended to allow multiple readings. Like a gazelle on the banks of the river, so my soul leaps out to you, Hashem. No, don't finish the metaphor. Just say like a gazelle in the river and let us read manifold layers into that association, because that's what creates rich tapestry of emotions. But David's not looking for poetry. David's looking for a raw, powerful, reaching out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu from the depths of despair. It's a very different experience. David HaMelech and Shlomo undergo the same experience. Essentially, they each committed terrible chay. David's a tzaddik, he performs tshuva. Shlomo is a poet, he has some justification for it. Well, I'm involved in diplomacy, and I needed to marry Bas Paro. So what? There was the first night of the Beis HaMikdash. So it's a very different feel. There's a very famous story that the Chaim Volozhiner, who was the Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, once asked the Vilna Gaon, should he take a certain mission? So the Vilna Gaon turned to Chaim Volozhiner and he said in Yiddish, you shouldn't take it, du bist da kluger nisht da fumma, which translates in English, you're a smart man, you're not a pious man. So it's very insulting to call Chaim Volozhiner not a pious man. What the Gaon was saying is that Hashem creates two different traits in the human soul, and they tend to be warring with one another. One is piety, which is pure and linear and binary and black and white and straight and devout. Then there's wisdom, which is subtle and complex and nuanced. And you have to know who you are. How did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create you? Are you a pious person? Are you a wise person? What's in your soul? Are you pious or are you wise? And now that you're developing, you want to try to complement what you don't possess naturally with that other part. If you're a pious person, try to acquire wisdom. If you're a wise person, try to generate piety. The challenge is really trying to create that blend of two very crucial traits that rarely inhere innately simultaneously. It's a question of developing those avenues or those horizons that don't exist. So Eov says, Hein Yiras Hashem Chachma, source number two. So he says the same word, Chachma, Az Tavin Yiras Hashem Eshlomo, Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. It's a chachma, but he uses the word hein, which is very striking. The word hein, the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Lamed Aleph interprets, means singular, unique. Hein, achas mehena. The person commits one of the melachos, one of the 39 melachos, even though it's only one melacha, achas mehena. So it's a singular wisdom. It's not just a wisdom that you have to pursue cognitively, or ishus chachma, that will unleash all your other intellectual pursuits, but it's singular. It's unlike any other wisdom. Very different. These are some very, very provocative psukim about an experience that you think is very, very innate and instinctive and doesn't require cultivation and can't be acquired through knowledge. The Maseilas Yesharim, in his introduction, is very intrigued because that's his mission statement, to try to persuade people to spend time thinking about Yirat Shamayim, thinking about everyone. Just assume that moral behavior, fear of God, would evolve naturally. Just learn another page of Gemara, learn another Shulchan Aruch, and this will all emerge naturally, and all of a sudden, he woke up in the beginning of the 18th century and there was a cognitive dissonance. People were learning, but it wasn't trickling down, which is what we're facing today, right? How do you get religious information that you study and allow it to cascade down to your identity and affect whom you are, rather than create that distance between your head and your heart, where you're studying and you're engaged, but it's not really changing who you are as a person. So he sensed this in the early part of the 18th century, probably because we had entered the modern age. Modern age was very existential, subjective. It wasn't just what are the truths that we subscribe to, but how can I translate it to my truth? And people were starting to yearn and search for subjective meaning. This is the era of personal expression, democratic politicalization. Of course, it becomes much more powerful in the 19th century, and that's where the Musar movement is born. Moshe Chaim Litzata, when he wrote his Sefer Mesillas Yesharim in the early part of the 18th century, he was not aware of a Musar movement. He saw Salanter in the beginning of the 19th century start the Musar movement, and they're conscious of starting a revolution. Movement can only become a movement when people are conscious of it. If you're not conscious of it, you may be introducing new ideas. It's not a movement. You're just introducing some interesting ideas that are taking root. Avram was conscious that he was an Avraham Mondragon. He was revolutionizing religious consciousness. So they're conscious. He saw Salanter is conscious about that. So in his introduction to the Mesillas Yesharim, he writes, Puma Shamar Shlomo Sor Tzurim Tevakshenu Kekesev Uchamad Monim Techapsenu Az Tevin Yiras Hashem. Line number two. Eino Omer Az Tevin Philosophia Az Tevin Tchuna. By the way, the Mesillas Yesharim was very, very well grounded in philosophy and math. He's a very well-rounded thinker. So he's not coming from a position of underexposure. It doesn't say Az Tevin Philosophia Az Tevin Tchuna, which is math, Az Tevin Refua Az Tevin Dinim Az Tevin Halachot Az Tevin Yiras Hashem. Harei Lecha Shel Havin Hayira Tzarech Levakin Shosah Kekesef Ulechapes Shosah Kimat Monim. Somehow there's a process and it's arduous and has to be attended to with well-designed, dedicated time, and hence his desire for people to spend time thinking about Yiras Hashem. So let's spend some time thinking about Yiras Hashem. How do we acquire this Chachma? How do we develop it? What are the steps? And what are the steps to a true Chachma that's unlike other Chachma that somehow liberates or galvanizes other forms of chachma? Because that's what Iyov said, Hein Yiras Hashem chachma. David says, Reishis chachma Yiras Hashem, is the Reishis. Because on the surface, we're seeing that chachma is fear-based. And if it's fear-based, then it stymies human expression, intellectual activity, because it's suppressive rather than empowering. Fear is always a suppressive emotion. You're afraid to engage in something, and you feel suppressed, you feel restrained. So how can fear empower and augment? And this is something that Rav Kook was very sensitive to. You take a look at Rav Kook in their Filei Tohar, source number four, Kishaskala lokitik tana, when you have a small-minded, midget version of Hashem, az hatsir shemitzayim es halakus gam katan. Then you see Hashem in small terms. V'chivan shehatochen olokim mavaris haktana in sofis, az ein l'shar kam adam naseh, very powerful words, sad words. There's no limit to how much a person can become zochel ubatlan. Passive, and meek isn't the word. Zochel's it's little means to drag. Zochel is someone that drags on the ground slow and not energetic. Viscous maybe. Ida Yerushalayim she'ein badeya. You hear that? Yerushalayim she'ein badeya. Yerushalayim without deya can be counterproductive to human experience. Ve'ech yavo adam lideha sarag shel godel Elokim. How can a person come to the magnificence of Hashem if he's been diminished by Yiras Hashem? So what is this Yiras Hashem we seek that's a chachma, that's pursued like kesef and zav, that's one of the mitzvahs we're chayiv towards, that somehow unleashes a very important part of the period of life you're going through right now, which you're studying the Reishis Chachma? How can you study the Reishis Chachma? So the Rambam provides a journey or roadmap, and that's the roadmap that we witness reaching its conclusion in Parshas Vayera on Har Moriah for Avraham. The Rambam's roadmap is included in source number 6. Heichi haderech liahavaso viyiraso. How do you achieve real ahava and real yira? And of course, it's obvious that we're not describing the fear of punishment, because that's the stymieing fear that Rav Kook was so cautious about. But what our Chazal referred to as Yiras HaRamamus, to understand the majesty, the sweep, the infinity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that somehow is empowering rather than shrinking. That stretches horizons rather than shrinks human spirit. How do we discover that type of Yiras Shamayim? For example, if you want to see, before you even read the Rambam, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu informs Moshe that Har Sinai is intended to deliver Yiras Shamayim, he associates it with the elevation of human experience. He writes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, source number 7, Yisrael pleads with Moshe not to hear the voice of Hashem because it's too crushing and it's too overwhelming. And Moshe says, no, you're missing the point. That's the whole concept. Don't be afraid. Interesting. Listen to this pasuk. Al tiro, don't be afraid. Hashem is coming to raise you. Anes is a pole. He's coming to empower you. That you'll fear him. He just said, don't be afraid. They're terrified. He says, don't be afraid. Hashem's coming to raise you through fear. It's a confusing pasuk unless you're able to discriminate between two types of fear. The fear that Rav Kook feared was crushing to the human condition, and the fear that is Reishis Chachma that can elevate human experience. Moshe is saying it's not this type of fear. It's not Sotetchem. You'll be bigger people if you encounter the type of fear that Hashem intends, but for that you have to hear his voice. And you can't hear it through an intermediary. You can't shrink him into human experience. It has to be divine. So the Rambam writes, source number 6. Hechia derech le'abasav yirasa b'shashi yisbonin ha'adam b'ma'asav uvruav ha'niflaim ha'gdolim v'yera'em ehem chachmasal she'in la'erech v'lokeitz. You expose yourself to the infinite sleep of Hashem. Now, people expose themselves to the majesty and the sleep of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through many different ways. The Rambam doesn't mention Torah here. He mentions Matzav Uvruav, his creation and his actions. In Sefer HaMitzvot, when he talks about Avas Hashem, he mentions Tarasa. Obviously, we believe Torah to be the closest approximation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in human terms. It's the summation of his will. And you're going to be exposed to his will. But for some people, in addition to Torah, you're exposed to the majesty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through nature, through science, through physics, through math. Those who are more humanists amongst us, people who study letters, the beauty in this world, the spirit of human emotions, the coordination of human activity, everything that we accomplish in this world bears and reflects HaKadosh Baruch Hu's spirit. The creativity of the embedded. A person can look at the internet and just see a association of computers, say, well, who gave human beings the creative spark to imagine that by communicating through computers we could revamp our world? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creativity. What leads to that moment of creativity? How come a human being has creativity and an animal doesn't? HaKadosh Baruch Hu embedded human beings with Tzelem Elokim. Hashem is the ultimate creator. He doesn't have to create, he just has to will it. And he embedded that will within the human imagination, and then we, of course, have to translate our spark of creativity into a discovery and into a process. So you study HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you inch closer to a greater understanding. And then when you spread that enormity in front of your imagination, that's the moment of Yirat Shamayim. The first part is the road to Avas Hashem. You see something great, you see something magnificent, you desire it, you're curious. I remember when I was your age, I was in Gush for Shana. What was it? Yeah, what? One of my shanas. And I went to we went to England for Ben Azmanim. We had nothing to do for Ben Azmanim. We used to stay till the end, till Tisha B'Av. So a couple of us, Yeshiva Bachar, went to Buckingham Palace in England, touring around. There was a real journey of discovery. We heard so much about beauty and art and its role in understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We went to the Buckingham Palace and we saw these enormous halls in which they had festive weddings and celebrations of appointed monarchs, and just imagine all the events that had taken place in these halls. And we saw these huge tapestries that covered walls that probably were 70 feet long by 50 feet high. It was just amazing, 50 feet, 30 feet, just amazing long tapestries depicting biblical scenes, David and Goliath, and Noah's Ark, and Abraham and Isaac on the mount. And the tour guide told us it took teams of 40 women, 30 years, to knit these tapestries. And we walked into each room, and each room was breathtaking. Another scene, and just was the beauty, Magadol Masech Hashem. And then behind us was a tour group from Houston, a couple elderly women. I remember walking into a room ahead of them. And as we walked into the room, and we were just dumbstruck, bewildered by the beauty, one of the women turned to her friend and says, look, Agnes, more curtains. That's just so, I was so broken. I wanted to turn to her and say, those aren't curtains. You buy curtains in Kmart for $7.99. These are works of art. This is human imagination. These aren't curtains. You have to see the world as beauty and majesty and Hashem, you can't just see it as curtains in Kmart. And our world is becoming a little bit shallow for various reasons I won't discuss tonight. Sometimes it's hard not to see the world as curtains in Kmart. And you discover Hashem, and there has to be a desire for knowledge and to engage with elements of Hashem's beauty and Hashem's representation, and obviously Torah at the forefront. But as you're exposed to that sweep and that majesty, that's the moment of overwhelming awe, which you realize there's no way I can even begin to understand more because it's just too vast and it's too sweeping. And the Rambam writes, look at source number 6, line number 4, Uch Shemachashe B'Dvarim Ha'ilu Atzmam. When you think about what you've seen, Miyad Hu Nirta Le'Acharav, you're literally thrown backwards. You're terrified by the enormity of it all. Nirta Le'Acharav Yifached, you're, I would say you're not afraid, you're just trembling. V'yodea, and you realize, Shehu Birya K'tana Shefela Afela, you're an infinitesimally inadequate, weak creature. Omedes Bidas Kala Me'uta, standing with limited aptitude. V'yodea, I'm sorry, V'etimim Deos. The Rambam gets this from David HaMelech in Parakhes. David HaMelech writes, Ki era shemecha, maseyetz ve'osecha, yirech v'kochavim asher konanta. When I look at your skies and I think of the planetary orbits, what do I think of? Ma enosh ki tizkerenu, uven adam ki tifkedenu, v'tachasem mat melekim. I realize the inadequacy and the frailty of the human condition. Namely, the way to achieve real Yirah Shamayim is to try to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu as deeply as you can, to the point that you understand that you can't understand it. And that's Yirah Shamayim. The humility that comes by encountering the divine riddle that's inexplainable. And the submission that leads to. Not submission, the contraction of the human experience, but submission to some higher authority that you've engaged with, some higher being. And you can only get there by trying to find Hashem, and then realizing you can't. So think of, and most of you have had some learning in your background, you look like you're in the age of somewhere between 22 and 27, most of you, more or less. Are you more aware of the limits of your Torah knowledge having studied a few years in yeshiva or seminar, or you're less aware? You're more aware, because the more you study, the more you realize you don't know. And the irony is, the biggest Am Haaretz in any Beis HaMidrash is the biggest Talmid Chacham, because he's more acutely aware of his limitations because he knows so much. If you stood me next to Einstein and you asked me who's a bigger ignoramus in physics, he'd be one, because I know so little about physics I couldn't even articulate what I know what I don't know. So I'm not conscious of my limitations. He had mapped out so much of the world of physics, he could say, this phenomenon I understand, this phenomenon I can't understand. He really felt, he really understood the lacunas in his knowledge, the gaps in his knowledge. So the more Torah you study, the more of a Kodesh Baruch Hu you know, by definition, the more you realize you don't understand him. And the greater the enormity you sense, and the more this humility and recognition of submission to a higher authority sets in. And that's how you achieve Yirah Shamayim. It's not fear. You're not afraid of repercussions. You can be the biggest tzaddik in the world with nothing to fear. You just know that there's something larger than yourself, larger than human experience, larger than our universe, larger than however wide you can imagine, however wide your imagination sails, there's something larger than that that you'll never understand. And it's that equation or that calculation that leads to Yiras HaRamamus. That's what occurs to Avram in Parshas Vayera. Avram's entire life was an odyssey in Avas Hashem. Why? Because his whole mission statement was to try to synchronize Hashem's will with human instinct. Because for 2,000 years, remember, we read Bereishis and Noach in 2 weeks. It takes 2,200 years. It's a bit of an optical illusion. It takes us 2 weeks to read Bereishis and Noach. It's a third of recorded history. For a third of recorded history, humanity lived in abject confusion, primarily about the profile of God, because they assumed God was angry. That's all they saw. They saw expulsion from Eden. They saw the flooding of an entire planet. And they saw population expulsions and dispersions. And they just saw endless punishments. And they just assumed God was vengeful and angry. And there was an asynchronicity between Hashem's interest, or God's interest, and human interest. I want to live a life of welfare, prosperity, comfort, happiness, and God is angry at me. Religion is never wedded to that type of dissonance. And Avram's great revolution was that monotheism is meant to enhance the human condition. and by serving a God you can't describe, your life should prosper and should advance. That's why it was crucial for Avram, not just as we would say, to talk the talk, but to walk the walk. He couldn't just be a philosopher, he had to be a do-gooder. He couldn't just be someone who spoke in abstract about a God who desired prosperity, he had to actually improve people's lives. To demonstrate that worshiping this type of God is going to enhance your life, not stymie it, not inhibit it. So you have to be an Isha Chesed, or else his Isha Amuna would have been faulty. And his whole life he demonstrated. He raised a family, he lived an elderly age, he and his wife Sarah were still active to a very advanced age. Chazal tell us actually minted a coin. In the ancient days they minted a coin. On one side of the coin were a young woman and a young man. On the other side of the coin was an image of Sarah and Avram. And they were just dumbstruck by the vigor that Avram and Sarah demonstrated at this advanced age, which is on display by his undergoing surgery in Parshas Lech Lecha, pre-anesthesia at 99, by his hustling around to greet the guests. He's a very active person, even in Parshas Vayera. Remember, the earlier generations had lived into the 900s, Misu Shalach and that whole crew. But there had been a dramatic decline in life expectancy at this stage, and people were getting older. And to see these people of vigor, it was an important moment. It demonstrated that, yes, this message of serving Hashem will lead to health and vigor and growth. It's his whole life. He had synchronized Hashem's will with his will, and that's when you love Hashem. If you ask me, why do I love Hashem? I love Hashem because his way of life makes my life that much better. It's very selfish at some level. I love Hashem because I imagine my life without Torah, and it's a darker life. It's a more inferior lifestyle when I compare it to my life following Hashem's will. So I'm thankful. Who do you love now you're at a younger age? You'll see as you grow older, your loves mature. And they attach themselves not to physical objects that taste good or look good or make your heart pulse faster, but you attach them to objects that really change you. I love Rav Lichtenstein, my Rebbe. He didn't taste good. It's not like when I made a bracha. It's not like he was so pleasant to look at that it wasn't unpleasant. I just loved him because he changed who I was. And love matures that way. It's a higher form of love. When you love something, not because of the way it affects your skin or your eyes or your heart, but it's a deeper identification with something that changes who you are. So you love your teacher. You know, I hope you don't love your teacher because of how handsome or pretty they are. Your parent, you love them because how they affected you. And that's Mirta Shen, girl looking, you know, looks like you're at the age where you're starting to enter that world of Shiduchim. That's the type of love you have to imagine for yourself. Obviously, at this age, the physical impulses and the urges should play a very, very powerful role, of course, but there should be some horizons beyond that that you can imagine there's a love that's much more abstract. So Avram had captured Ahavas Hashem. In fact, here's a trick question. Avram is the only person in Tanakh to be referred to as an Ohev Hashem. Even Moshe isn't referred to as an Ohev Hashem because Avram revolutionized it. He introduced the concept. So if you turn the page, Avram is called source number 11, Yeshaya, Ata Yisrael Avdi, Yaakov Asher Becharticha, Zera Avraham Ohavi. It's the only case in Tanakh that a person is referred to as an Ohev Hashem. Avram. So he passed all the tests with flying colors. It was the end of the semester. And Hashem says, you have one lesson left, and that's called the lesson of Yir Shamayim. You've proven that you can serve me when you understand me. Now prove that you can serve me when you can't understand me. And quite frankly, you shouldn't understand me because that would run contrary to all the moral impulses you sense in your pure heart. Sacrifice your son. Can you serve me now when it doesn't make sense? Can you serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Here's where Yir Shamayim translates from a philosophical abstract into real religious experience. If you understand that Hashem is unknowable and you defer to that other being, then you're willing to persist in that religious experience even when it doesn't make sense. That's what makes sense. We're able to serve the Rabbanu Shalom not just when it enhances your life, but when it's a riddle, it's a mystery, when it's frustrating, when it's tragic, when it's dark, when you're in Auschwitz, when there's no way to reconcile divine will and human experience. That's when Yir Shamayim sets in. And this is Avram's Auschwitz moment, to just transfer some of the terminology. There's no way to understand how to kill your son. It just doesn't exist at a human level. So everything that he had accomplished until this point was out the window, was irrelevant. But he had accomplished, this is the thrust of tonight's shiur, he had accomplished so much in understanding Hashem that he knew that he couldn't know him. And once he knew that he couldn't know him, then he was willing to defer to that will. Because he had seen so much of Hashem that he knew he couldn't see Hashem. He had reached that level. He spent so many years in yeshiva, so to speak, that he was the biggest Hamaris in town. Namely, he was the one who was most aware, who was the Einstein of religion, that he just couldn't know Hashem. And because he was aware of that knowledge, he was able to submit to Hashem's will. And once he submits to Hashem's will, then the Malach says, source number 12, Ata Yadati Ki Yireh Elokim Ata. Keyword being Ata. I knew you were an Ari of Hashem. Hashem says, I've read Yeshaya. Hashem didn't need to read Yeshaya. I've seen your behavior the last dozens of years. But now I need to know that you're Yirei Shamayim. But the Akedah can only be the end of the journey. That's why it happens now. It's not incidental. The Akedah is the last of the Nisyonos, according to the Most Rishonim. And even if you feel that the struggle for a burial for Sarah is part of the Asara Nisyonos and Chayasara, it's an anticlimax, that's for sure. This is the climax. This is a grand finale in terms of the drama of Avram's life. It has to be less, because Yirat Shamayim has to occur after the pursuit of Hashem that characterizes Avas Hashem. Or else it's a shallow Yirat Shamayim. I don't even know what I don't know, because I haven't started to try to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I'm not submitting to anything, I'm just submitting to nothing. Rather than understanding Hashem as deeply as I can, seeing Him as broadly as I can, and then Ki Era Shamecha, as David HaMelech says, Matzeyes Bo'tzecha, Yirech L'Kochavei Asher Kananta, now that I see so much, now I realize the hierarchy, Hashemayim Shemayim L'Hashem, Raras HaSan L'Bnei Adam, the different levels. It could be mathematical, it could be scientific, it could be art, it could just be. That discovery of Avram at Har Moriah, that could only happen after the pursuit and seeing and exposure, and then the retreat into the recognition of human inadequacy, that same process occurs at Yom Tov, at a national level. Vayar Yisrael es hayad ha-gedola asher asa Hashem b'Mitzrayim. They finally saw the type of action that couldn't be imputed to a natural disaster or change. The water stood still. The land bedrock became dry. Kriyas Yom Tov was unmistakable. Yad Chazaka. It wasn't Etzba Elokim, it was Yad Chazaka. Vayar Yisrael say Yad Chazaka asher asa Hashem b'Mitzrayim. Now that they saw so much, Vayiru Ames Hashem Vayaminu b'Hashem u'b'Moshe Abdo. Now that they pushed the envelope and pushed back the horizons of human understanding, they saw Hashem more than slaves witnessed in Egypt. Now Yirat Shamayim set in. They weren't afraid. They passed through the Yom Tov. They were triumphant. They were confident. But they realized how little of HaKadosh Baruch Hu they could possibly comprehend. Vayar Yisrael, Vayiruam. Notice the sequencing. The same sequence of Avram. The path to Ava, or the path of Ava, is the approach to Yira. The more that you try to understand Hashem, the more you understand you can't understand Him, and you're embedded with Yira. Yira happens at the tail end of Ava. And what's even more powerful here, but I'll show it to you in a moment back with Avraham, is the wordplay. At some level, and this isn't pure etymology, but our Masorah strikes this, there's a wordplay between Re'ia and Yira. Vayar Yisrael Esayad HaGdola Vayiru Ho'am Es Hashem. The attempt to see Hashem has to convince you that you can't see Him. The attempt to see Him is Avas Hashem. The recognition that you can't see Him and fully understand Him is Yirat Shamayim. So the Re'ia paves the path to Yira. And Yira protects and preserves the transcendence and the authenticity of Re'ia. Because if you think you're seeing Hashem, then you're not seeing Hashem. If you know you're not seeing Hashem, then you're seeing Hashem. So without Yira, there's no Re'ia. Or the Re'ia is forgery, is distorted. You think you're seeing Hashem, it's paganism. So the Re'ia enables the Yira. And the Yira preserves the integrity and the authenticity of the Re'ia. Vayar Yisrael, it's a circle, it's not a linear pasuk. Vayar Yisrael, Ziyad HaGdola, Asher Asa Hashem, Mitzrayim, Vayiru Amas Hashem. It's exactly the second, same sequencing as Avram Avinu. What does Avram say after the Akedah? How does he call the mountain? Asher Yomer Hayom, Bahar Hashem Yeh-ra-eh. It's a very ambiguous word. Who is being seen? Is Hashem being seen? Or is man being seen? Shalosh Pavim Hashana Yeh-ra-eh Kol Zechorcha. Man is being seen. Hashem isn't being seen. Let's say Bahar Hashem Yeh-ra-eh Hashem. Or Bahar Yeh-ra-eh Hashem. Bahar Hashem Yeh-ra-eh. The words are intentionally manipulated to avoid Riyas Hashem. But they still invite Riyas Hashem. Because if you don't see Hashem, then you're seeing Hashem. That's the irony. If you think you see Hashem, then you're distorting and perverting God into a human form. That's inauthentic. If you know you can't see Him, then that's the closest way to see Him. It's called negative knowledge. To know that I can't understand Him is the closest. What's the only image in Tanakh that conveys Hashem's presence? The Aman, the distortion of visibility. There's no image that's associated with the Kodesh Baruch Hu except for the distortion of visibility, the Nanakabah, the clouds. So if you know you don't see Him, that's Yerush Shemayim, then you're really seeing Him. But the only way to know that you're not seeing Him is to try to see Him and to walk down the road of Avas Hashem. Because if you don't make that effort, you don't know what you're not seeing. You can't understand that you don't know Him because there's no basic knowledge in that effort. And that's the sequencing that parallels Avram's life and the moment of the Yam Suf. And a third moment that I'll describe in a few minutes to you. Ariel, you had a question?
A bunch of Lakhot also essentially were viewed in supernatural sense and not natural. So why not turn that much out? Have an effect as opposed
to... It's a good question. Maybe it's a Pesach shir. You'd have to dig into the deep end of Kriyas Yam Suf, excuse the pun, and what happened at Kriyas Yam Suf, based on the drushas with the Akiv Yosef, Luzavaz of Anazari, and Agada, Mishlachas Malach Hebrayim. But the Pesach clearly announces that it's different. And the way it announces it, by the transition from Etzvah to Yad. A quick answer would be, there are many scientists today that will try to associate all the elements of the Makos with natural phenomena, which may be fair. And Hashem could have manipulated the cycle. The Yamsav is harder. The Yamsav also has Maisa Bereshis connotations. You know, the world was created by taking a world covered with water, or a universe overwhelmed with water, and separating waters. Higher waters, lower waters, day two. Yabasha, Yamin, day three. This is a reversal of Maisa Bereshis. This is instead of collecting waters, you freeze water. So it has a lot of connotations of Maisa Bereshis rather than part of the natural cycle. But Erev Pesach. Erev Shavuot Pesach. Yes?
When Hashem showed
Moshe's
back,
in part of it, it carries that same duality. As you can see me, Verisa Zacharai, Ufanai Lo Yero. So you can see part of me, but you can't actually see me. Ufanai Lo Yero. So there's that debunking of the prospect that you're going to actually see HaKadosh Baruch Hu and understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it captures that same element. This is the type of Yiras Hashemayim that David HaMelech refers to as Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. Humanization is basically a contracting experience. Humans live narrow lives. I can't live beyond myself. Beyond my personality, beyond my traits, beyond my limits, beyond my flaws, beyond my time, beyond my space. I have a framework and a context that frames me. And my encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu can stretch me, if it's authentic, and stretch my horizons. Or if I try to humanize Hashem, then essentially I'm taking that one stretching moment and contracting it into my own space. So paganism is, by its definition, a contracting experience. I'm taking grandeur and shrinking it into narrowness. Serving something beyond me and understanding something beyond myself, and of course not just an HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's every time you stretch beyond yourself and you pair with something that you can't achieve on your own, whether it's marriage or partnership or whatever, you stretch yourself. You stretch yourself, you have to recognize your limitations, that you create that complementary part that you can reach. If you think you can accomplish everything, it's really hard to pair yourself with someone else because you don't have needs. So the first entry point to expansion is to realize the limitations of whom you are. It has to do with humility, of course, at a moral level. The more humble you are, humility is not just a moral quest. Humility is an intellectual resource. Humble people tend to be smarter people. They're more receptive to knowledge. They're more curious. They're more interested. They don't under appreciate, what's the word I'm looking for? They don't take people for granted. A lot of people take people for granted because they position themselves as superior, and they immediately read people and they condense people into smaller, more immediate packages. People that don't underestimate other human beings because they don't overestimate themselves, they're more apt to learn not just in books of knowledge, but books of people and books of life. So there's a humility that Yerush Hamayim confers that leads to expansion. But it's not just moral, it's also just levavor nasos, encountering HaKadosh Baruch Hu, knowing your limitations and encountering something beyond yourself and studying something that will defeat you, to which you'll have to surrender. And when I learn a sugya, my favorite moment of the sugya, which I'll describe in a moment through the Gemara, I'll leave it for the Gemara, because the Gemara actually says it. That's what Moshe told him at Har Sinai. Don't fear fear. Don't fear contracting fear. You're right, that's terrifying. But Hashem will raise you. And the only way to raise you is by encountering who He is and seeing at Har Sinai that you can't see Him. There's no images at Har Sinai, there's only a voice. So that was the process of Avram's life, which concluded at the Akedah, at his Auschwitz moment. Mesiras nefesh, Akedah Hashem, killing your child, or living through nightmares of Jewish history, or tragedies of the human condition, these are your Hashemayim moments, not Avas Hashem. At those moments, you can't understand Hashem's calculus. And at those moments, you have to draw upon your Yerah Shemayim and say, I just can't understand them, but it in a way affects my, that's Eov's struggle. How can I serve him if I can't understand him? And that's why Chazal hold Avram and Eov as contrasts. They always position Avram as superior to Eov. Whether Eov ever arrives at Avas Hashem or Yerah Shemayim is in Machlokas in the Gemara, but Avram clearly achieves Yerah Shemayim. That's in the pasuk. It's a beautiful Tosfos in Brachas. It's a one word in Tosfos, but it really captures what I just said. It's really just one word. The Rambam writes that the first parsha of Kriyat Shema is selected to be first, Parshas Veschanan, not because it appears sequentially first in the Torah, but because it has three seminal elements. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Kriyat Shema, source number, probably before. Source number 9. Now, Kari Shalosh Parshas Elo, Shema. Vayim Shemoah, Veschanan Ekev, and then of course the Parsha Tzitzis. U'makdimim likros Parsha Shema. Why do we read Shema first? Meisheyesh ba. Here are the three elements. By the way, if you want to have kavana during the first Parsha of Kriya Shema, this is what you have to have kavana for: Yichud Hashem, Hashem Echad, exclusive, indivisible. Echad doesn't just mean exclusive, Einon Milvada, but Hashem has an indivisibility that we never encounter. Everything in this world can be subdivided. It's just how you're studying physics, right? So this plate can be divided into molecules, subdivided into atoms, subdivided into quarks, subdivided into protons. And in the last century, we discovered how much energy could be released by smashing subatomic particles. Everything in this world can be divided. Hashem is indivisible. There's no... Hashem is unlike any phenomena that we're aware of. We're living in Givat Shmuel. It's now night. It's not day. It can't be day and night. In a few minutes, we're going to recite. Well, tomorrow we'll recite Yotzer Or Avare Choshech Oseh Shalom Avareisakav. Hashem, it's day and night at once. Hashem doesn't operate in binary truths that are either yes or no, on or off. Hashem is everything. Fire and water, good and evil, day and night. At Har Sinai, Hashem told Moshe, you see this article? It's Tameh. And there are 49 flowcharts to determining that it's Tameh. And you know what? It's also Tahar. And there are 49 flowcharts that will determine that it's Tahar. And I can't explain it to you because I live in a binary world, as you do. In Hashem's world, they're all multiply true. They're all coexisting truths. We have to practice halacha, and since we're binary, we have to decide which we will practice. But it doesn't mean that the discarded position is irrelevant. This means that it's not the one that we choose as human beings to implement. But Hashem spoke in multiple truths. Niels Bohr was a Dutch physicist who once said, the opposite of a true statement is a false statement. The opposite of a profound statement is another profound statement. Hashem doesn't deal in true and false. He deals in profundity, profound statements. So Echad doesn't just mean he's exclusive, it means he's indivisible, and he encompasses the totality of experience. Everything that exists comes from him, which it took the world 2,000 years to discover. Because the world presents as diverse and dichotomous, not just separate, but also contradictory. And for the human imagination to be able to unite all those elements into one creator took 2,000 years. And thank God we've more or less accomplished it with living in a world of monotheism. It took a while. Second part of Shema is the primacy of, or is Avas Hashem, Be'avdas Hashem, Be'lukecha, B'chal Avachem, B'chal Anshecha, B'chal Mi'odecha. And the third part is Talmud Torah, which the Rambam calls, a very famous Rambam, Shehu Ha'ikur Ha'gadol Sheha'kol Talibo. Without Talmud Torah, you don't really know Hashem, so therefore it's hard to build a religious network or a religious system without really knowing Hashem. That's why you have to study Torah. Talmud Shehu, the Rambam writes, Ha'ikur Ha'gadol Sheha'kol Talibo, in source number 9. So when the Rambam delineates the elements of Kriya Shema, he lists three. Avas Hashem, Yichud Hashem, Avas Hashem, and Tarasa. Tosos in Brachos says that there's a fourth element in the first parsha of Kriyas Shema. Source 10. Sheshnei Psukim Elo, the first two Psukim, he's describing only the first two, Shema and Vihavta, he writes, Midabrim B'yichod Hashem, Shem Echad, B'ahavaso, Ahavas Hashem, Uvi Yirasa. Tosos believes that Yirah Shemayim makes a cameo appearance in the second Pasuk of Kriyas Shema. Where? Can anyone find the word Yirah Hashem in the second Pasuk of Kriyas Shema? I know the Pasuk well. V'hafta es Hashem elokecha. I studied it in kindergarten. V'chol levancha, v'chol nafshecha, v'chol miyodecha. I only see one verb in that sentence. V'hafta. Doesn't say v'hafta es Hashem elokecha, v'yareisa miyolokecha. Where does Yirah Shemayim appear according to Tosos?
It's either v'chol
levcha
or either
v'chol modecha. V'chol nafshecha. What's the drash of Rabbi Akiva? V'chol nafshecha in brachas? V'chol nafshecha afilu hu notel es nafshecha. You have to be committed to Hashem even to the point of death. Now, if you have to die, that's not a moment of avas Hashem. Because you can't understand it. You shouldn't understand it. The world doesn't make sense. Why am I dying? Why am I at Hors de Fe? Why am I in a concentration camp? Why am I being stampeded by crusaders? Why am I dying in a terrorist attack? Why am I sacrificing my son at Har Sinai? At Har Moriah? But you realize you can't understand Hashem, and therefore you just draw upon Yirah Shemayim. So the definition of Yirah Shemayim and the translation of Yirah Shemayim, not just from an abstract philosophical concept, I know I can't know him, but therefore that determines sustained commitment even during times of perplexity and confusion and not understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tosfos defines that as Yirah Shemayim and inserts it into the phrase B'chol Nafshecha Shem, even if you B'chol Nafshecha. So it happened to Avram, and it happened at the Yamsuf, and it happened a third time in the Beis Medrash in a very interesting fashion. There was a Tana called Shimon Hamsuni who was very, very adroit at darshan. He had great, great drasha skills. And there's a two-letter word in the Torah that seems to be redundant. It's a preposition. Seemingly an irrelevant word, not even an importantly grammatical word. But every time there's that preposition, he had a drasha. The preposition is the word es. You or et. You can go through any pasuk in the Torah and delete the et. It doesn't really add anything. If I say vayochal vayishta hamayim, I could say vayishta et hamayim. It doesn't add anything to the grammar. So anytime there was an et, he said, oh, it's coming to include something else. Most famously, kabed et avicha v'et imecha. Could have said kabed avicha v'imecha. So he darshan l'rabot achagadol, that you have to respect an older sibling. One of my favorite ones. Okay, all the others. Kabed et avicha v'et imecha, all the other etes. And then he got to one et that he couldn't darshan. Just couldn't make sense of it. He was a very, very imaginative and creative person. But his mind shut down. Where was it? Source number 14. Kivan shigia, line number 2, let Hashem lokech hatira perash. He stopped. By definition, he has to stop. Because how can you compare Yirah Shemayim to any other experience? I can even compare Avas Hashem to any other experience. The Rambam freely compares. And you know, it's not the Rambam that compared Avas Hashem to the love of a woman. It's Shlomo HaMelech and Shir HaShir. Who uses the love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Uses the template of human marriage to capture it. So, something about Ava, because it's synchronicity, and you can synchronize yourself to another human being, but non-understanding, simply the absolute and abject inability to comprehend, that can't be applied by definition. We're phenomenological. Hashem is beyond phenomenology. He's beyond it. He's not phenomena. So there's no way to associate any other experience with Yirah Shemayim. So we stopped. So his innocent Talmud said, Rebbe, you scored 99. It's an imperfect score. They interviewed him. He said, what does this mean? Tara, matahe alayim. All these drushos. What will happen? So he says, beautiful sentence. Kishem shekibalti schara ladrisha, kach kibalti schara laprisha. Just like I received the schar for all the drushos, now I'm receiving schar for surrendering. That does not mean I'm a very pious person, and I receive schar for the drashos, but I also receive schar for knowing my limits, for being discreet and respectful and deferential. No! The drisha and the prisha work in the same dynamic as the re'iyah and the yira. Without drisha, We're not trying to find Hashem. There is no prisha. It's a shallow prisha. When I try to understand Hashem, and then I realize I can't, then I'm parish. That's the Yakeda moment, Atayadati. That's the Vayura Mitzashem. That's the prisha when you're learning Shas. And the prisha preserves the sanctity and the integrity and the transcendence of the prisha. So it's not like I have all this career of drisha, now I just have to take a step back. Without the drisha, I wouldn't have reached this moment of prisha. I wouldn't have realized that I can't understand Hashem and that I can't drive shit about Yiras Hashem. That was a pasuk. It wasn't some random pasuk. It was a pasuk about Yiras Shemayim. Without trying to understand Hashem all these years, I would never know that I can't expand this pasuk of Hashem Elokei Chatira. And now that I've tried, and I know that I don't know Him, and I know that Yiras Shemayim is singular, Hein Yiras Hashem, Chachma, it's the singular Chachma, not of acquisition, but of surrender. It's a very different type of Chachma. It's paved by the advance of wisdom, but there's a moment of surrender. It's the sweetest moment in Talmud Torah. It's the most transcendent moment. Maybe you'll feel it outside of Talmud Torah also, to study something about HaKadosh Baruch Hu so deeply, and to apply yourself with such perseverance. And then I reach a point in a sigil right now, if I simply turn the page or open another Tosfos, I will completely and totally distort everything I've discussed, everything I've achieved until now, because my mind just can't handle it. I'm at my max. I'm at the overload. If I introduce one more logical vector, one more option, I'll simply collapse. And I know it's there, but I have to stop. And then I know I'm standing with Hashem. That's why I love Torah so much, because I studied a lot of disciplines. I never felt it in other disciplines. I felt like, I'll spend more time, I'll get molecular biology, I'll get physics. I know that I'll never get Torah. I know that I'm always chasing the elusive, unattainable. That could either be crushing, or that could be ennobling. You're chasing Hashem. That's the transcendence of the moment. So he wasn't saying, I'm a pious person, I know my limits. The Drisha enabled the Prisha. And as we said before, the Prisha protected the transcendence of the Drisha. The Ri'ah enabled the Yira. And the Yira protected the integrity of the Ri'ah, that you know you can't see Him, then you're seeing Him as real. You attempt to see Him as real, not humanized. So it's three different moments in human history. One individual, one national, one scholarly. This is a scholarly moment, streamed through Torah, not through experience. Har Sinai is Yiras Shamayim streamed through the human heart. I can't understand Him, but I have to submit to Him. Yam Suf is streamed through collective hearts, standing at the Yam Suf, the experience of a collective nation. Here it took place within the football field of Talmud Torah. They were in the base medrash, they were darshaning, had the Gemaras out, and they were thinking about the Gemaras, but it was streamed through Hashem's Torah, but it's the same effect. And the wordplay of Risha and Prisha mimics the wordplay between Ri'ah and Yira. We have just 2-3 more minutes. Let me just summarize and then remind you of the two challenges of Yiras Shamayim in general, but in particular where you are right now. Yiras Shamayim is not meant to be contracting. It's meant to be empowered. It's meant to stretch the human imagination to encounter something beyond yourself and to submit to that. Submission has to be transformed from a word that sounds meek and onerous into a word that's empowering. Not hard, not so easy in today's vernacular. It's a chachma that has to be studied. Much of this year has been, I think, very abstract. I haven't come in here and shaken with you and trying to create emotions, but hopefully these ideas can then be translated into emotions. So the process is a cognitive one. Into chapsenu, into bakshenu. Az tavin yiras Hashem. Now, how does that affect you? How does that affect the moment in your life when you have a taiva, or you don't want to do a mitzvah, or you're frustrated by something you want that Hashem wants, and I say, you know what, it's not about only me, but I can be a different person and a better person if I put myself into that equation that I can't understand HaKadosh Baruch. It happened 3 times. It happened a climax for Avram, and each time the sequencing was the same. Yira can never be before Ahava. True Yira can only come in the heels of Ahava Hashem. So it happens to Avram, Ata Yadati. It happens to Am Yisrael Yamsuf, Vayar Yisrael Vayiru. And it happened to the people in the base medrash, Kishem Shemekablim Schar Ladrisha. It's the Kishem that creates similarity or parity. Kishem Shekibalti Schar Ladrisha. Kach Kibalti Schar Laprisha. And remember, we started by reading Rav Kook about how opposed he was to the shrinking fear. Well, listen to his statement about this expanding Yiras Shamayim. Source number 7, he writes, HaMusag shel Yiras Hashem hu mosif oz v'gevura b'nefesh adam. It leads to be more courageous, more strength. Who would have thought that Yiras Shamayim can make you to a stronger person? HaMevino sabitarasav. You understand it's true. It's source number 17. It transforms your life into content and ambition. Those are not emotions you would associate, Yiras Shamayim and ambition. But it's a stretching experience, not a shrinking one. And I'll just conclude. The last three lines, Tzior, an image. Yiras Shamayim is meant to elevate every single human faculty. Yiras Rabba Moshiyesh Ima Ahava the Eden Pnimi has love and soft subtlety. Very interesting to compare Rav Kook's harsh criticism of the contracting fear with his glorification of the fear of Hashem's man, not the fear, the awe of Hashem. Okay, so what are the challenges in today's world of Yiras Shamayim in 5 minutes or less? Well, there's one challenge that's universal, unless we don't really live in a society of awe. We know too much to be awed. When's the last time you felt awe? I feel like, rightly or wrongly, we've discovered much of what lies behind. The internet has done a good job. We used to have portions of this world that we just, you don't remember, none of people are streaming. I used to not know things. Now I know everything, because I'm just 2 clicks away from accessing that knowledge. It's created a world which has become a lot more ordinary, a lot more pedestrian, rather than a world in which there's knowledge bases that I'm not in possession of. But in particular, the challenge of Yiras Shamayim exists for you in two variables. Number one, living in Eretz Yisrael during a period of redemption. The Zohar says, when it contrasts Ahava and Yira, the Zohar, source number 16, says, Kasad Echad Omer Yivdus Hashem B'Simcha, Kasad Echad Omer Yivdus Hashem B'Yira, B'Gila Barada. How do you justify or jive Simcha and Yira? Ma Bin Hai Lahai. Elekan, the Ahava, the Simcha, Bisman of the Yisrael Sharim Barak Hadisha, when you're in Eretz Yisrael. Kan, the Yira, Bisman the Yisrael Sharim Ba'arachar, when you're in Chutz La'aretz. Chutz La'aretz, Galus, invites Yira, because it is predicated on conditions of defeat. It doesn't make sense. It shouldn't make sense. The world is perplexing. Not always, but the grand tapestry of history is just, it's indecipherable. Why are we suffering? Why are the Jews presented, not just Gullus at a national level, but a broken world for humanity? Our world is broken. The world isn't yet redeemed. There's suffering, there's strife, there's injustice, there's evil. And at a local level, for us Jews, most of us have had experience in Gullus, we have lived collectively through very, very challenging moments. And Yiras Shamayim was the go-to emotion. It doesn't make sense. It's not meant to make sense. We love you, we're committed to you, despite the fact that we can't reconcile. And one of the major tests that Am Yisrael has passed in the last generation is the Holocaust. I think that Hashem tested the Jewish people, and I think that we passed with flying colors, that we were able to maintain our faith after the Holocaust, lends to certain changes in Shemayim, that we now come and speak to God differently. We're your people, and we've outlasted that challenge, and our faith is still intact, which is a major, major accomplishment. I don't think that other generations may or may not have been capable. It's a tremendous testament to our generation, to our people. So one challenge is living in Eretz Yisrael. It makes a lot more sense to live here. I live in a settlement. I wake up every morning and I look at Avraham Avinu. I see prophecy. It all works well. Pages of Tanakh are open. History is waking back at us. Our state has become so successful, it gets giddy and intoxicating. That's why it invites Ahavas Hashem, because not only is it a world that's comprehensible, but it's a world in which we're partnering with Hashem to change history and to re-landscape our world. We feel like it's not just that we feel like the world makes sense as it would in New York or in Toronto. Woke up and it's a good day, it's shining outside, and people are helping elderly people across the street. But Hashem's my partner. Hashem wants me to be his wife again. He's looking for me to marry and to change history and to rebuild our state. That's why there's so much Ahavas Hashem. That's why in the Dati Lumi community there's a reintroduction of Simcha and Breslev and other trains and trends that capitalize and that emphasize the Simcha. What's the word? I remember there was a time, believe it or not, I know it's going to come as a shock to you, there was a time in which not every person in your life was called Achi. It really is true. They used to just be your brothers and sisters who were called achi. But now everyone's achi, which comes directly from that family. We're all Hashem's family, and we're all. And it's very powerful, and I think it's really led to a thrust in our people. But it came to a head 10 years ago during the disengagement from Gaza. You're mostly probably a little too young to really remember it. Maybe some of you are older. And the leading rabbis of the national religious world announced a few weeks before a very famous three-word phrase, Hayolo Tihia, 12 years ago. Won't happen. I was shocked. How could a person, 70 years after the Holocaust, and 6 million people were killed, and Hashem let that happen, how could he say that Hashem won't let 8,000 Jews be resettled? And you know what? We woke up, and it happened. So I was 40, whatever, at that point, and I was able to reconcile why my expectations were dashed. Imagine you're a 15 or 16-year-old high school student, and you were assured by your teachers that it won't happen. And then it happened. So walk across the street to Tel Aviv, and now you know why so many 35-year-old former Dati Lumi boys and girls are no longer religious. Because we gamble in the will of Hashem, and we're lost. And in the Haredi world, you would never gamble. When they finally woke up for their protest, and it was very late, they said, we don't understand Hashem, he's beyond. It was like the first part of the protest letter was Sefer Iyov, chapter and verse. We don't understand you, you're far from understanding, we can, but please Hashem, save us from this Eitzar. Let's say something. I'm not justifying their response or our response, I'm just saying our response was based on, he's my brother, Hashem's my brother, right? I know what my brother's going to do, I know what Hashem's going to do. I know him so well. Come Hashem, selfie. Time for a selfie. And that's part of the problem, living in the giddiness of redemption. It's a very, very heady experience, and I'm very, very troubled that we don't have enough Yerushalayim to stabilize. No, as much as you think you know, you don't know. As much as this Reishis Michas Gula Seinu, that's where it ends. It could be 200 years or 3,000 years. Who knows? And will there be Chas V'Shalom a war with that? Who knows? Hashem knows, we don't, and we try our best. The second challenge is not just where you live, but where you are in life. And now you are studying the world. And you are expanding your horizon. I have to tell you, when I speak to people your age, I'm very jealous, because I look back at these years of my life, and these were the best years of my life. I'm envious that you get to go through that ride again, like a Disney ride. I wish I could go back on that ride again. You feel yourself expanding, developing, new people, new ideas, new thoughts. When you get to be older, you're the same person. You just change very, very moderately. But these are moments of grand and dramatic expansion and development as people. So first of all, you have to assure that it serves some larger purpose. In the broader academic world, the broader world of university is pitched on self-development. You want to develop yourself. Our world has to be, I want to develop myself to become a deeper person so that my relationship with Hashem is deeper. I once asked Rav Lichtenstein, why should you study literature? He said, it's a hechsher mitzvah. It's preparing yourself for a mitzvah. What mitzvah? He said, lo tonu. You don't want to say the wrong thing to the wrong person and insult them. It's an avera. To understand what to say to people, you have to understand human nature. To understand human nature, read literature. Could have been psychology, the same price. So hopefully, can you trace, at some level, enough to trace tomorrow's lecture at 10:30 to your avodas Hashem? That's myopic. But can you trace the overall pattern of what you're involved in to somehow making you, obviously professionally, more equipped? That's avodas Hashem. In the obvious way, it's a no-brainer to get your degree. Whatever other courses you're taking, whatever other experience, I'm trying to become a healthier person, more well-rounded. I'm not doing it for myself, I'm doing it so that I become a better person for my family, for Hashem, for myself. It doesn't have to be self-pietudis, you know, I'm eliminating myself, but it can't be egotistical. There's a lot of room between pietudis and egotistical. I'm trying to find that space, not about me. And the second issue is, of course, can these years of expansion and seeing Hashem make you realize, like Avram did, well, I don't really know him. And the more that I try to know him, the more acutely aware I become that I can't see him. And then you've arrived in the territory of the Yerushalayim. And then can you translate that into the S word, which is very, very scary at your age, submission. Seems like the loss of liberty, the loss of freedom. How can you find that calibration where, if anything, you say, wow, this is my ticket to augmentation, not contraction? How can I get into Rav Kook's definition of Yerushalayim, where it leads to more strength and more profundity and more depth, because I'm exposing myself to something that I can't reach in my own experience. Okay? So, Yashikach to Ariel, you have a lot of good cheer in here.
Thank you.
If you didn't sign in and want to click the record, sign up over here. If you have source keys, just don't leave them on the table. Bring them over here and I'll take care of them. And we'll see. Thank you, Harriet. And Marv, down here now.
I'm married to
Adam. What's your name?